So, you obviously are a bit of a you are a bit of an online phenomenon, a bit like Owen Jones. You have hundreds of thousands of followers. You often go viral for things that you say, but I don't think people really know who the real George is. So why don't you start by telling us a bit about yourself? I see you've got some very nice hair today, very good looking.
Thank you very much appreciated. Only dyed my hair red a few months ago, but I think I'm going to stick with it for now. I'm George, he, him pronouns, please. I'm a historian, I'm an environmentalist, I'm a very active trade unionist. I love a pub quiz, I love sports, I like watching really good shows and movies. On the IMDb app, I've got over 700 things rated. I'm slowly learning Spanish. I've got a 71-day streak on Duolingo, and I'm hoping to take up 2-hour weekly sessions quite soon. Not very good at it at the moment, but hopefully one day. I love meeting people, and you talk about me being online, but I think I need to stop being online as much because I'm definitely happiest when I'm really far away from the Bird app. But I've got to learn to do that.
I mean, it's not the Bird app anymore, is it? It's the X app. It's the everything app.
Oh God, I'm so delighted that Elon Musk is ruining my favorite platform. I love that so much.
I'm just amazed that he's still obsessed with the idea of calling an app X, because he's been wanting to do that since the early 2000s. And I don't know. Speaking as a Corbynite, I can very much admire the sheer determination to constantly like push forward something that like everyone else has left behind. It's like, yeah, okay, you went all in on something back in the 2000s and you're never gonna let it go, and you know what, I respect that. So, but yeah, so I was going to ask you afterwards next why you left the Labour Party, but since we're talking about you specifically, what led you to join it in the first place? Because you ran as a candidate before Corbynism, so you've been in it for a long time, or you were.
Indeed, indeed. If I didn't leave, I would have been a member for a decade now. Yeah, I know, right? So I saw that the Miliband days, I saw the Corbyn era, and then obviously the shit show that is the Starmer era, really. But yeah,
The
no,
dark
it's I
times.
did join. Yeah, well, I joined in 2013, late 2013, because I was just starting to get active in politics then, didn't really have an interest before that. Just experiencing things in the real world, really, and seeing the dire state of the country at the time after 3 years of austerity, and it was awful. And the only way back to fight back against the Conservatives, knowing that there would be some sort of change, was by getting involved in the Labour Party. This is what I thought at the time, and I read up when I joined the party. I was reading things from Tony Benn, watching speeches, and all that stuff. And I got involved in lefty circles way back in the
Hang on,
day.
we got to interrupt for just to Tony Benn.
To Tony Benn,
To
to
Tony
Tony
Benn.
Benn,
I don't know if he'd
absolutely.
want a salute. I don't know if he was a militaristic person, but I'll just give him like a thumbs up.
A good man, a good and decent man,
Yeah.
is to Tony
I was
Benn.
like,
But yeah, no, honestly, my first ever Labour conference, I remember going to left wing events there, and I just had a really great time, and I felt like there was definitely a space for socialists and people on the left within the Labour Party at the time. I remember an interview by John McDonnell and Jeremy Corbyn prior to the 2015 election, alongside many other left-wing
this is
candidates.
the famous interview with Vice, isn't it?
That's the one,
The one
exactly
that gets
that
cited
one.
by every single friggin' like right winger. It's like, see, they were gonna undermine the leader too, so we can do it.
Is that interview, because there were a group of 40 parliamentary candidates at the time, including Corbyn, McDonnell, Clive Lewis, and loads of others on the left. Including myself when I was a parliamentary candidate, although I had very little chance of being elected. But there was a good bulk of parliamentary candidates, which, if elected under hung parliament, could really hold Ed Miliband to account. So I think that was a really good strategy to do because there was a space for socialists and trade unionists. And then Corbyn put his name forward for Labour leader. I knew more about John McDonnell than Jeremy Corbyn, but the day Corbyn announced, I was like, yep, I'm going to back him. Got very involved in the Corbyn campaign because I knew people on the left, and I was the Southwest regional organizer for the Corbyn campaign. And when I was approached to do that, or when the talks went ahead for me to do that, he was 100-1 outsider. He was 200-1 at one point. And then obviously seeing that campaign grow and grow was just so inspiring. And I put all my time and energy into the Labour Party over the years and campaigned so much. and put so much into the party because there was a genuine chance of real change. But yeah, and then obviously we had the Corbyn years and everything. When did you join the Labour Party?
In January 2016. So I was the Johnny Come Lately entryist Marxist that everyone, I'm going to say I'm not a Marxist, I am, but like that everyone was scaremongering about, right? Like people coming in only months after Corbyn was elected just to help him win. And it's like, yeah, no, I did that. There's no shame in it. I have no shame. Well, I mean, I have shame, but not about that.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, no, you know, a lot's changed in that time. And yeah, I think what the initial question was, why did I join?
Well, you sort of answered why you joined. It was to fight back against the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats. And they were the major party force. As kind of, I almost joined in 2010, especially after Miliband. But I was in this because of my... it's going to make me sound like I'm saying I'm old. Because of my age, I entered sixth form, became more politically engaged and active just after the 2010 election. So we just had 13 years of New Labour, civil liberties, restrictions, economic crisis, right-wing politics. And it was like the Labour Party did not look like an alternative. And Ed wouldn't be elected for another 6 months. So it didn't really have any kind of appeal. Otherwise, I probably would have joined it earlier. But once I'd made my choice to join the Greens, I was very stubborn. Sorry, I'm talking about myself.
No, not at all.
Anyway, we summed up why you joined. You have subsequently left, and you've gone into a little bit of why. But why don't you share with us why you left the Labour Party, like the main reasons?
It was really, you know, it's one of those things where you put so much time and energy and effort into this, and it's dominated my life for many years. And, you know, I'm still thinking about, you know, politics every single day, and maybe less on electoral politics. But I think that's mainly the reason. Politics isn't just about electoral politics. And I think trade unions right now, fighting back against the establishment, I think is very, very important in order to achieve real change. They're delivering real change for people right now. They've delivered an 11.4% pay rise for SGN staff. RMT has achieved a 14% pay rise for the lowest paid Network Rail workers, Unite achieving a 28% pay rise for Luton Airport workers, etc., etc. And when Keir Starmer ran for Labour leader, he promised to stand with my own trade union, the UCU. However, he now refuses to acknowledge that struggle that workers have been in through recent industrial disputes. And I think that was a huge betrayal, not just the people who backed him, but also the whole values of the party. This is supposed to be the party of Labour. So that was one of the reasons. The second one was that I genuinely think now that a Starmer government, given a mandate by many progressive voters across the country, would be a dangerous government, in particular for LGBT plus people. And I sincerely believe, and I genuinely believe this, that Keir Starmer is a transphobe. He dismissed the Labour campaign for trans rights pledges when standing for Labour leader, has taken no action against transphobes. He supports parents vetoing trans children's right to socially transition. He whipped Labour MPs to abstain on Section 35 and so many other things. This wasn't the case of him making a one-off comment. It is a consistent pattern of behaviour which has enabled and emboldened transphobes. And, you know, he himself is going to throw trans people under the bus. And that is something I'm very concerned about. And not just to mention that, but also on the economics as well, not even going to introduce wealth taxes, scrap tuition fees, or deliver anything which is going to radically change this country. It is going to manage the decline. It's very dangerous. I'm very, very scared. And then finally as well, you know, no doubt people would have seen this on Twitter as well. I do think the treatment of Jeremy Corbyn, who Starmer called a colleague as well as a friend, you know, it has been... But he's a good and decent man. Jeremy Corbyn is a good and decent man. And even Theresa May admitted that he was a great constituency MP in a last final PMQs. And I don't think as many people are going to attack him for being a good constituency MP. He inspired a whole generation into politics. Time and time again, he's been on the right side of history. And he's somebody who I really admire. And I think the decision to block him as a Labour candidate for Islington North was really disgraceful. And if the Labour rulebook says that I can't say that Jeremy Corbyn should be the MP for Islington North, then why on earth will I be a Labour member? I want to see him back in Parliament. I want to back independent socialists such as Jamie Driscoll and Emma Dent Coate in the North East and Kensington, respectively. And I'll back Socialist Campaign Group Labour MPs and also Green candidates as well. But the Labour Party is so alien to the values that when I signed up, and especially during the Corbyn years, they've really gone backwards. And I do think, actually, hold them to account, and socialists and trade unionists should vote elsewhere. And Labour Party need to proactively win back those votes. And that's what I believe. But we'll definitely talk about that more, no doubt, with the discussion about the Green Party and other left-wing projects as well.
No. I think what you said about... I know you. I think you were worried that you hadn't mentioned economics, that it seemed an afterthought. But the thing is that, like, it's easier to stay in a party when the disagreements are about, do we spend X billion on the NHS or X slightly smaller number billion? Because then it's like, it's getting better, but slightly less fast, slower than you would want it to. But if your leader is coming out with reactionary social policy, actively stepping backwards versus the actual way things are now, then it's a lot harder to say, well, at least things are getting better slowly, because they're not going to get better slowly, they're going to get worse. And that does apply to a lot of things Starmer stands for, I think. Economic policy too, things getting worse. Privatization in the NHS accelerating, for example, is very, very likely. But it's, social policy, LGBTQ rights is a big reason I left as well, because it's a lot harder to rationalize that with yourself. Because when you see, you know, Starmer going out and making speeches where he says, oh, I feel as if we shouldn't spend as much, you're like, ah, it's disappointing, but I've seen people do that before. But when he goes out and gives speeches saying, we're not going to introduce self-ID, we're going to clarify guidance so that single-sex spaces are protected, you're like, this is a direct step backwards from stuff your own party introduced. That is not something I can support. Mm-hmm. And so... I very much understand that.
You've taken the words right out of my mouth. And there was a paper I read, I can't remember how long ago, but it was about people will not engage with their political parties if they do not feel they have a space within them. Like you say, if there were policy concessions, if it was like a watered-down version of the 2020 pledges, it was like, yeah, it's not exactly that, but it's broadly there. There's a space for Corbyn and the Labour Party and, you know, back self-ID and many other things.
The honest truth is the bar is so, so low. I can guarantee anyone watching and listening that most Corbynites and most, like, Labour-loyal socialists, like, obviously some people would leave no matter what, it's totally fair, once Corbyn left, I mean, the office of leader, but I think most sort of Labour-attached socialists would be like, if you allow us to influence policy, allow us to select candidates democratically, keep a space for Corbyn, appoint some socialists to the shadow cabinet. They don't even need to be in front bench senior positions. They could just be in the shadow cabinet. And you listen to us when we propose policy at conference and things like that. If you give us those things and you stick to your pledges more or less, they would have absolutely no issue with him at all.
Yeah.
Because that was sort of what Miliband was like. One of the big things that was notable about Miliband was he sort of took the pressure off on selections. And that's how a lot of people on the left got selected, because he wasn't putting his thumb on the scale in the way that Starmer is now. And so I guess that Starmer could be happy that he's got his 20-point lead. And so he's not going to be thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't have done what I did. He's probably very satisfied with that strategy. But from the perspective of someone on the left, I can guarantee you the bar was very low and he still failed to clear it. So,
yes, indeed, exactly. And you touched upon very, very good points there. Like, I even said I'd be critically supportive of Starmer when he was elected as leader. But like you say, there is nothing there really that can appeal. So what we need to do now, and I will no doubt discuss this a little bit later as well, if you get your votes elsewhere, Labour need to win back your votes. And if they make concessions, particularly on you know, backing LGBT plus rights and making concessions on tuition fees and others, then they will win us back. But until then, until like they're going for the strategy of socialists and trade unionists have nowhere else to go, and it looks like the polling is reflecting that at the moment, because a lot of socialists and trade unionists, whilst unhappy with the Labour Party, will still vote for him. It's very sad.
One of the ways people have responded to the Starmer leadership is by leaving and setting up new political parties of the left. You had briefly the Northern Independence Party was a big meme for a while, but the more sort of serious party that's contested elections is Breakthrough. They had some councils for a while, and now you've got Transform, which is seeking to unite a bunch of them. What are your thoughts on these new left organizations, and do you think that there is a purpose to them, particularly as different to the Green Party?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. There's a big discussion for the left to have, and I think we need to distinguish between the short-term strategy for the next election and the long-term strategy, thinking about 10, 15, 20 years from now. So for the short-term, in particular at the next general election, and I've talked about this already, we need to back independent socialists such as Jeremy Corbyn, Emma Dencode, and Jamie Driscoll, Socialist Campaign Group MPs, and also the Green Party. Because I think that's really important, because if there is a hung parliament and we have more independent socialists, Socialist Campaign Group MPs and the Green Party in parliament, I think that is going to be a good thing because it puts pressure on Labour to make concessions. But when we're thinking about the long term, I believe in the long term there needs to be a party of organised Labour representing the left with trade unions front and centre. Now, I make that point because we'll definitely have a discussion about the Green Party, but trade unions need to be front and centre here. There's 98 trade union Congress affiliated unions. 11 are affiliated to the Labour Party. That could go down to 10 if the TSSA and GMB do eventually merge. If that happens, I'm not too sure. Obviously, they have many of the big unions there, but there's many, many trade unions that are not affiliated to the Labour Party. Now, I think the goal of a new left party isn't to achieve dominant parliamentary representation, but to shift the public narrative and force the Labour Party to win the votes of socialists and trade unionists by shifting their platform and shifting the public debate. You know, I mention this because Corbyn's own Peace and Justice project has more supporters than the Green Party as members, and the Enough is Enough campaign, which epitomises the values promoted by Corbyn, has more supporters than the Labour Party as members. Now, that doesn't mean that all these supporters are going to go towards this new party of the left, but it's not impossible to rule out a new party of the left having the largest party membership, raising a lot of resources, and achieving around 5 to 10% in national opinion polling. Now, you asked me about Breakthrough and also other left parties. And the problem with the left is that there are too many small left parties. Now, the reason I backed, on Twitter or X, sorry, I should say, the Transform project is because I think they're making a genuine attempt to pull many parties of the left together. Now, we had a little discussion as well, which I thought was very interesting, and I do look forward to talk about the Green Party because I do want the Green Party to do well right now, and I think their growth is going to be a good thing for progressive politics. But I think when we're thinking about the long term, we need a party of trade unions front and center. And you know, whether or not Transform will succeed, that's one thing. At the moment, you know, they've raised about £10,000, got 4,000 people on board, which is not obviously the basis for a strong left-wing party. But I appreciate the fact that they're trying to bring people together. And any project that tries to bring the left together and unites them under a new umbrella party of the left, I think, you know, should be looked at. I genuinely believe that. Now, I actually wrote an article saying that Jeremy Corbyn should set up a new party of the left because I think he can bridge people together that Breakthrough, Tusk and others have not been able to do so. And whether or not that happens, I'm not sure. But I think any new party of the left, it does need a big left-wing figure in it. And I also believe that it can only succeed if trade unions are on board. And maybe the RMT and the Bakers Union, you know, could be part of that. I think that if there's going to be any trade unions that back a new political party, it is going to be the RMT and the Bakers Union, because they've already said the London branch of the RMT and the Bakers Union as a whole have said they'll back Jeremy Corbyn and Islington North. So they're willing to put political resources behind these sorts of projects. And the RMT recently disaffiliated from Tusk. So there is room for them to perhaps put their resources behind a new party, but we will see. But yeah, I know, what are your thoughts, by the way? Because I know we've had our Twitter discussion, well, but it'll be good to have a back and forth there.
The first observation I would make is that I think the Bakers Union and the RMT backing Jeremy Corbyn, I think, speaks to the fact that even the more radical unions are still fundamentally cautious. Corbyn is a candidate who has a very, very good chance of winning. I would say he's the favourite in Islington North. But they're not, they haven't come out and said they're going to back Emma Dentcode, because she would not start as the favourite in Kensington. She was only an MP there for 2 years, and Corbyn has been the MP there for 40 years in Islington. And so it does, I think, speak to the fact that there is still quite a limit on what unions are willing to do. Unions are, you know, not primarily electoral organisations. They have members to represent, and they have, like, campaigns to fight that mean they aren't going to be affiliated with various political parties. You mentioned that there are only 11 unions affiliated to the Labour Party, and part of the reason for that, I think, is that a lot of unions don't want to be politically affiliated. And some of them straight up can't be. Like, you know, the PCS can't really be affiliated because it represents civil service workers. The teachers' unions can't really be affiliated. They don't want to be. It doesn't feel right for their members. And I think those limits are going to apply to any political party, not just the Labour Party. You mentioned Tusk as another example. I think that Tusk is a very good example of how having unions involved with a party doesn't change the fact that there is a hard limit on what a strictly ideological left party can achieve. Because Tusk has been around for 13 years, if not longer, if you count No to EU preceding it in 2009. And it's never really achieved anything. It's never won any election. It hasn't really shifted the narrative all that much. But it has had, at multiple points, funding from the RMT and support from them. And it hasn't really made that much of a difference. Someone asked me on Twitter the other day why I didn't include the Tusk figure in a by-election result. And it was a valid question, but it's because they got 1% and they weren't really relevant to the debate. And the election was in question was one the Greens had won. And so they were more relevant because they'd actually won the seat. But I have more things to say, but I don't want to ramble on. So what would you be thinking about what I said there?
No, it's a fair point. And like you say, we're mentioning left-wing projects that have not succeeded electorally. I'm thinking about 10, 15 years from now when we look back at this. You know, hopefully we'll have a party of the organised left with a lot of resources, large party membership. Because the thing about Tusk and others, Breakthrough, for example, they've had a few thousand members between them. But, you know, if you really have a coordinated party of the left where you have hundreds of thousands of people putting their time and energy into this and raising a lot of resources and lots of other things, then you do have the ability to shift the public debate. And, you know, for example, you know, I mentioned what a new left party should aim to be. It should aim to be what UKIP did a few years ago. And although they achieved minimal parliamentary representation, they raised a lot of money. They managed to shift the public debate on many of their policies. And that was their sort of goal. And now they're completely irrelevant. They're gone because essentially they served their function. They've done everything they wanted to do. A party of the left, especially when we have things like the Peace and Justice Project and Enough is Enough, showing that there is a will for a coordinated effort to deliver policies, for example, the five policies from Enough is Enough. There is definitely hundreds of thousands of people out there that need a body to put their time and energy, or would like to put their time and energy into something. It may be electoral, may not be electoral, that's one thing or another. But yeah, Tusk has failed to succeed, but I think, like I say, anything that aims to bring people together should be looked at, and I don't think should be necessarily dismissed. But like I say, I would hope to like to see Jeremy Corbyn sell the new party of the left after standing in Islington North, but we'll wait and see what happens.
I mean, that's the thing. You make a very good point that really relates to the failure of a lot of these older parties of the left. I mean, if you look back over the past like 30 years, particularly under New Labour, you had a bunch of new organisations form. Socialist Alternative, the Socialist Alliance, which was the 2000s version of Transform. It brought together a bunch of left parties, including the Alliance for Green Socialism, the Socialist Party, and a bunch of others. Mm-hmm. And it ran a bunch of candidates. It got quite large vote shares in quite a few places. Mm-hmm. They did very well, I think, in one of the elections for Hackney Mayor. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, they floundered. And the one that succeeded most was the one with the biggest personality, which was Respect, because they had Galloway. Mm-hmm. And obviously, they got an MP in the form of him, but they also got a bunch of councillors. They nearly won a London Assembly seat in 2004. And I think, yeah, it's true. You need a big name. And right now, none of these parties have them. And Corbyn is the biggest name in left-wing politics. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't join any of these new formations, I think that they will flounder ultimately. Mm-hmm. My fear with a lot of these organizations as well is, again, I kind of look at history and just the modern history of the past few decades, where every time you've had an attempt to build these kinds of parties, and I don't just mean new parties generally, I mean, like, new parties specifically founded on the goal of we are left-wing, we are socialists, and we are an ideologically focused party. I feel as if every time we've had that, whether it was the Scottish Socialist Party or the Socialist Alliance or Respect, they've collapsed into personal infighting and bickering within the space of about 5 years, and within 10 years they no longer existed. Mm-hmm. And I will say, hasn't happened to Tusk. But then again, it is a coalition of interests rather than a single party. I worry that that's inherent to left-wing parties. I mean, I saw Breakthrough set up their organizational structure. They already had a deputy leader and a leader. And I'm like, that's a little bit ambitious, don't you think? Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't even have a councillor. Like, it seems a little... But then I'm biased, I think, because I look at the Green Party's approach to leadership and I find that it's, I think, avoided some of these personality clashes. If you have one, that is the flip side, right? Is that you get more traction if you have a big personality. Mm-hmm. But if that big personality dominates the movement, then it ends up being a personality contest between do you like this guy or do you not? Mm-hmm. I do think that wouldn't apply with Corbyn because his style of leadership has always been very different, right? I remember reading Alex Nunn's book and somebody described him as like his style of leadership is to like lift people up and help them lead rather than push himself to the front. So it might work with him. I could definitely acknowledge that possibility.
It's a good book as well. I got
yeah, I have both editions.
Fantastic.
He signed mine, actually. He came to, well, not to dox myself, he came to my city for an event, and I caught him in the pub and was like, can you sign my copy of your book, the second edition of your book, because I bought the second one. The second one written after 2019, which was... You I don't know if you've said this on Twitter yet, actually. You told me that you have joined the Green Party now as a sub-paying member.
I think backing the Green Party is what I think it's very important right now. If you put finances behind it, if you help them grow, I think that's quite a good thing to do. So I already said I voted for the Green Party in the local elections, got a lot of backlash there. Although a lot of these people who said, why don't you vote for the Labour Party? Well, firstly, the Labour Party were first in the war, but the Green Party were second. And also as well, you know, in the next general election, I'm very likely to be in Hillary Benn's seat, and I'm not going to be voting for Hillary Benn, and the Green Party is second, so I will be back in the Green Party locally. I was a very proactive Labour member. I campaigned very actively, you know, I put time and effort and resources. I think it's important for the Green Party to grow. You talk about personality, and you know, Caroline Lucas has been a dominating figure within the Green Party. However, she's standing down at the next election. And the Green Party, despite having leaders that don't have big name recognition, I should look at the YouGov thing for it, but Carla Denyer and Adrian Ramsey are not household names in the same way Corbyn, Boris Johnson and others are. But they're still polling for around 5 to 10%. They're doing quite well, actually, because they're offering policies that were offered similar to the Corbyn years in 2017 and 2019. I think it's really important that, at least for now, putting time and energy or resources into the Green Party to take votes away from the Labour Party and to force them to win back socialists and trade unionists who go to the Green Party, I think that's the best thing we can do electorally at the moment. Now, when I talk about politics, I think the most important thing is getting involved in community campaigning, trade unionism, and all that stuff. But when we're looking at electoral politics, giving your vote to the Green Party or even a few pound a month to the Green Party, I think that can only be a good thing if it ensures that it helps them grow, because not only helping them grow increases parliamentary representation, local representation as well, but also as well, it shifts the public narrative. We get talking about issues like scrapping tuition fees, nationalisation of essential services and other policies which the Green Party are offering. Talking about that in the public domain, I think can only be a good thing, because I think with the end of the Corbyn years, if there is not a space or a party or person to actually proactively talk about these issues beyond Twitter, then I think that's quite a bad thing. But we know at least that the next election debate, there will be a Green Party representative there who will be talking about these things. And yeah, I think that's the right thing to do, at least for now. But I do think in the long term, my issue with the Green Party, not necessarily an issue, but what would sort of block me from backing them long term is if they don't get trade unions on board, especially if there is a new party of trade unions set up. But again, that's long-term thinking. But at least in the next election, the growth of the Green Party is only a good thing for progressives.
There are a great many people on the left who have abandoned Labour but haven't joined the Green Party. Before you told me you joined, I was going to ask you what your obstacle was. But what do you think the obstacles are for people to join? Obviously, you said one is trade union backing, but then many of these smaller left-wing groups don't have trade union backing either.
Yeah.
So what do you think is stopping people from making that leap? And I say this as someone who also didn't go straight from Labour to Greens. I had a period where I was not sure either. So yeah. I understand hesitancy.
Yeah, no, actually, it was listening, you know, Matt Zarb-Cousin, when he was talking about joining the Green Party, I thought he made some, you know, really good points. It's not a perfect party. There is many problems within the Green Party as well, including transphobia. You know, I mentioned this on Twitter as well. Like, the Green Party do need to address transphobia. It is a problem. Transphobia is an institutional problem which affects all parties, including the Greens. But I don't think their leadership are transphobes at all. I don't think Adrian Ramsey and Carla Denyer are transphobes, whatever. And I do think they are strong allies. I do understand why many socialists and trade unionists have not joined the Green Party. You know, there's some, you know, local Green councillors who may not be as left-wing as, you know, the leadership or many others. You know, there's two types of Green members or Green councillors or representatives. You've got, what was it, the watermelons and the mangoes. You've got those who are yellow on the inside and green on the outside, and those who are red on the inside and green on the outside, of course. So you do have these wet liberals who are part of the Green Party. And then you do have genuine socialists who are there as well. So I understand if people don't want to put their name forwards to a party, you know, where some local councillors aren't that great, but they don't have to campaign for them. That was the case in the Labour Party. There are many people who were there who were essentially, you know, red Tories. They don't necessarily have to campaign for those councillors, but just the left-wing councillors there, as was the case, what happened for many people who backed the Labour Party. They put the time and resources to those who actually would deliver for their community and are offering the best platform. So I get why loads of people have not joined the Green Party. And again, like I say, my sort of thing is chucking a few pound a month towards the Green Party and not doing too much legwork in the same way I did for the Labour Party. And I'll obviously vote for the party. I'll back many good Green candidates. But I understand why people have not done that. Or if they'll just vote for the Green Party, or if they're just completely disillusioned with electoral politics altogether, because I don't blame them. You know, you had a lot of hope and optimism over the last few years and a real chance of delivering a government that would work for the many, not the few. And that was taken away because, you know, that the opportunity to elect a Corbyn government that time is gone. And the Labour Party right now, it's not the case of Starmer offering 10 pledges. It is a very mild form of, you know, conservatism, whilst also throwing trans people under the bus and, you know, many other things. It's a big, big problem. So I understand why people are completely disengaged with electoral politics altogether. And what I would say is I think every socialist should be a trade unionist. If you are, you know, working in your community, get involved in your trade union, put your time and energy in there if you don't want to get involved in electoral politics. And I think that's the most important thing you can do. But if you also have energy to campaign for the Green Party or independent socialists or even socialist campaign group Labour MPs, then do that as well, because that actually does make a difference electorally. But yeah, I understand. But I think Matt Zarb's cousin, and actually your interview with Matt Zarb's cousin on your podcast.
Oh, you listen to it?
I do indeed, of course.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
I do, absolutely. And that was really interesting. And I think there was really good points made there. And that's the conclusion I've come to. So I'll be back in the Greens in the next election.
Lovely. Well, as the final sort of formal question I've got, I will carry on talking, but it'll be a more relaxed section after this. You are, I think, still tarred with the infamous. Sorry, it's really funny. So I'm trying to not to laugh.
I find it funny too. It's fine. Don't you worry.
So the context here is that when Britain left the EU in January 2020, you tweeted, "That's for Greece." It made a lot of people really, really angry. And you went like very viral for it. I remember it very well. So there's a lot of things to say about that. But the first is like, you were before that as well, quite Eurosceptic, even though it wouldn't be fair, I think, to call you a Brexiteer or anything like that. But are you 3 years on from us formally leaving the EU, are you still a sort of Eurosceptic at this point? And what do you think about Brexit?
And this is also going to annoy a lot of people. I stick by what I said. I think the treatment of Greece by the Troika, which included the European Commission, has absolutely destroyed many lives of people in Greece. And Syriza were rightfully punished for accepting the bailout package and privatising more than Thatcher ever dreamed of, right? They've been absolutely punished for that. And that's a lesson for any progressive project that goes down the route of austerity and abandoning your own core values. And I think even if Starmer wins the next election, by the way, I do think if he does go down the road of austerity and many other things, and I think this could have doomed Miliband as well if there wasn't enough pressure and a hung parliament. And I certainly oppose the campaign to rejoin the EU. The EU is a capitalist free market and corporatist club. My issue, though, was with the deal. I did not like the deal. It was a deal that was actually backed by Keir Starmer, which many FBP people actually seem to forget about. It ended free movement of people and Erasmus. And I think that was really, really bad. And, you know, one of the biggest change of opinions I've had over the last few years was on free movement of people. I strongly believe in free movement of people. And I think the option to end free movement of capital is good, but the ending of free movement of people was very bad. So I would like to see a renegotiated deal where we would bring back free movement of people, but also expand that beyond the EU27 as well. So that's the sort of big fundamental disagreement I have with the strategy promoted by the Labour Party and the Conservatives, which is, again, what Keir Starmer said in 2020. He said he would back free movement of people, and now he's completely abandoned that. I think people should
be... Yeah, but George, look, you can't hold politicians to what they said 2 years and 7 months ago. I mean, if we held politicians to what they said, like, 2 years and 7 months ago, then, like, you know, where would we be? Then politicians would have to, like, do what they'd promised. And that's just outrageous. That's radical. That's communism.
That is communism.
And we aren't communists on this podcast, okay?
That's so funny. But yeah,
ignore like the recent video where I was reading the Communist Manifesto. Like that was a fever dream. That was a fake. If you know, people like to say things on the internet that aren't real, you know, they're like, oh ha ha, Stats for Lefties was reading the Communist Manifesto. No. Didn't happen. It's not real.
Yeah, don't hold Keir Starmer to account when he's running for a leader of public office when he was 57 years old. Definitely not.
That's... I'll mention that later on. But I didn't even realise the age gap between the two candidates. But anyway, Still you're a skeptic. By the way, would you mind if I called this episode "That's for Greece"?
If you would like, I
because I think that would be really funny.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. I really do appreciate it. And is the socialism in our lifestyle?
I also want to say a particular thank you to the lovely comrades on Patreon who make this episode and all of my content possible by subscribing. Romanan Prasudi, Mohammed Mumit, Duncan Black, Madeline Sheen, Joseph Bailey, Barry James, Neil Barton, Juditha De Silva, Thomas Alexander, Ruth Holliday, Conrad, Mick Mickateer, Chris Gravel, Patrick Lefebvre, Bert Rothkugel, Stephen Carr, Alex Wilson, and Scott Folan. Without your support and the support of all the other patrons, nothing I do would be possible. So be sure to sub to Patreon at patreon.com/leftystats. Thanks very much for supporting my work, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.